So Juan, so if everybody's okay with calling the meeting to order, let's start at 6:01. And this meeting is being recorded.
I have started recording, so you should be good to go.
Okay, so let's do introductions of who's on the meeting tonight. And I don't know, like Brady Bunch style, if you can see yourself around the screen. I'm Kim Bria, TAB Chair.
Andrew Mallory, board member.
Greg DiLoretto, board member.
Rich Fagan.
Riyad Harithi, board member.
Mary Baumgartner, board member.
And Lance Calvert, the staff liaison, public works director and city engineer.
Sorry, I'm switching PDF and I've got to flip between tabs between the agenda and the notes on here. Because I see we have a review and approval of the September 2020 notes. We approved January. So did everybody get a chance to read the summary notes from our last meeting in September? Does anyone have any corrections or additions?
Nope.
Okay, so anyone would like to
move to approve? I so move.
Sorry, I can smell my dinner in the other room. I was totally distracted. Anyone move to approve the minutes from September?
Sure, I'll move.
Thank you. Anyone second?
I'll second.
Okay, I'll approve. Thumbs up in the window. I can't see you, Riyad.
I'm in a dark spot, so I'm sorry. I'm not. Let me see if you can see me.
That's tell okay. Me. Do you? You're very dark.
Oh, that is very dark. Oh my god.
That's good.
That's better. That's better.
Yeah. Here we go.
Okay. So everyone approves the September 2020 summary notes. And thank you all for being here tonight. This is an exciting year, for, you know, between preparing for Christmas and trying to get meetings in and the technology fund at the city. So I'm glad this worked out. So for business, let's move on to the 2021 work plan topics.
And Kim, you should be able to share your screen if you want. So you should be able to see that option at the bottom. I don't know how that works.
There's a share button, Kim, at the bottom.
Do I want to share my screen?
Well, I'm just saying if anybody wants to, you should be able to share your screen, whether that's the work plan topics or other items that you'd want to post up there on the screen instead of just seeing everybody's face.
Gotcha. On the work plan, I'm trying to find the notes that I have of here in the email that you sent. Was this... I think I'm missing a document. Oh, it's great to be paperless. I looked at it. Was this from Morgan on the work plan topics?
Yeah.
The agenda?
No. On the business, the 2021 work plan topics. Or do you have that in front of you, Lance?
Yeah, that should come from, you guys should have gotten some stuff from Morgan. I have the same problem, Kim. I've got 500 emails here coming up, but, I have the summary notes, which were
right.
Just approved.
Summary notes, because what she sent out last was the summary notes in the agenda.
I don't think I got any work plan topics, but...
No, I didn't either.
Hang on here.
Just checking now. There were two attachments she sent. One was the advisory board meeting draft summary, and then the agenda.
So, we talked by phone to see what the work plan, the 2020-21 work plan topics are the topics to move on to the new council. So when we talked by phone, and I see here, I don't think we have a document on this. So it's a list of the sidewalk discussion. So three items that I've got here is the sidewalk discussion for code revision and adoption. We've been talking about that for a few years. The House Bill 2001, the transportation elements of that, and website hub communication tools for transportation use issues locally and regionally. So we have all the advisory boards have the opportunity to have information up on the website, and we talked about that a little bit. And also, let's start there for 2021. So starting with this, and we don't need to get into it tonight. Just what are we going to hand the new council next year on these issues? So starting with the sidewalk discussion, we had talked before about the possibility, you know, how we can have uniform information on sidewalk codes, because it is really a point of confusion quite often for development.
Okay. And this almost runs, maybe this would be a little helpful. I think this runs parallel to the annual advisory board report to council, which is item C on the business agenda. But really, I think forward-looking topics that would be included in that annual report form, talking about potential goal setting for the next calendar year for the group.
One of the issues we talked about also was this notion of stepping up our maintenance of streets and getting back up to that paving condition rating and needing that we strive for. That was our conversation we had with they agree that's important to do.
To get our PCI ratings back up?
Yeah. Because we dropped them because we didn't really need that. That's capital project. But when the transportation fee was passed, on the basis of having a PCI of 80, but then she said we're down around 60.
That's not good.
It seems to me that if council would agree, that's an important concept. We need to review that direction.
So what I'm hearing, Greg, is maybe one of the topics for 2021 would be a renewed emphasis on pavement maintenance.
Yeah, that's what I would suggest. You know, they probably drive the roads just like we do. It's not pretty obvious. So we need them to buy into that policy. That's important.
I second that. And Lance, would be differentiate the terms maintenance versus cultivation?
Yeah, I mean, it's a sort of a fine line definition between preservation and maintenance, depending on who you're talking to, I guess. But
the maintenance, in my mind, is reactive versus preservation is proactive.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm hearing Greg and everybody else, we want to be proactive rather than reactive in that concept.
Yeah, I think that's true. By the time you get to reactive,
right.
You gotta do both. You gotta do both. And I think the bigger issue is that the elected officials recognize the importance of maintaining this investment that we all spent in the street system. It's like not putting a coat of paint on your house. You bought it, you got a coat of paint, you don't even do anything with it. So we need them to buy into that.
I think it would be useful to share with the new council too where the demarcation line is for maintenance versus rehab, because maintenance used to be, you know, you could get away with, I don't know, Lance, if it was a 2 or 3 inch grind and overlay, and now any grind or overlay is it triggers off the ADA requirements of updating all your curb ramps. So maintenance, you know, is it more down to crack sealing now, or what level of where's that cut off for maintenance?
Right.
Come on, don't my engineers want to chime in on this?
Well, I mean, if we've got to, let's be proactive. I mean, if we've got to bring this in front of the, you know, make sure this is dealt with, let's do what we've got to do.
Well, no, it's being proactive, but maintenance used to cover, you know, a lighter grind and overlay, and now that's not maintenance anymore. It's moved into a more expensive rehab. It triggered off being rehab instead of maintenance. So can we clarify that for the new council so they understand what we're talking about in proactive maintenance versus a CIP project?
Do you want to get that specific with the city council at that point? We really want them to acknowledge that we need to generically maintain the streets we have. Really the basic concept is we don't want to be not taking care of what we have while we spend all of this. If you look at what ODOT has done in the past, you know, they got to this land building this stuff to take care of what we have to do. So Jim, I haven't heard about that. Where did that come from? Overlay
and
all that, it triggers an
ADA. Right. I'm assuming you guys all are aware that there was a presentation to the city council on November 2nd. And you can look that up in the city website on Granicus on pavement street pavement management, and a presentation by our consultant on that topic at that meeting. It was delayed. It was originally prepared quite a bit earlier in the year, but with COVID and the fires and everything else going on, it kept getting pushed back to sort of a work session topic. But definitely a good goal, and that 11-2 meeting might be something for the group to take a look at.
I guess my concern is that because our PCI ratings are dropping, once you fall below a certain place, you can't crack seal your way out of it. So if we're more on the edge of that and you've got pavement that's all alligator, then you're past that normal maintenance. And I think if there's a way to articulate that to the council, and maybe this is in that presentation you're talking about, Lance, so they understand the timeliness of it. The same way if your roof is leaking, if you let it leak a couple of years, now you're into a rehab project instead of maintenance.
And the presentation to council really identified that, you know, maintaining funding levels is critical to that, you know, conversation of trying to continue to push towards more in the smart investment and preservation, and trying at the same time to rehab streets that have fallen into disrepair where they are beyond a preservation type of treatment. So, you know, decreasing that funding level would just, you know, particularly timely as next year is the next budget cycle discussion in our two-year biennial budget discussion process, that we don't fall off of that goal and keep stay on track to try and not have a basically what would amount to a buildup of deferred capital expenditure.
So is it possible that we could just reinforce what you've already presented to them?
Yeah, I think this is, you know, getting back to the work plan topics that, you know, focus on pavement preservation and management more so than just maintenance is a good way to phrase that.
Agreed. Thank you, Lance.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need to make a motion? Okay.
So what about the sidewalk thing? So what on the plan is going?
Yeah, I think the sidewalk discussion is also very timely and would be a good task to spearhead, just because infill development and, you know, that age-old chicken and egg conversation of sidewalks to nowhere and what's good policy and where should a sidewalk be built and where should a sidewalk not be built is something that, as the city moves to build out, really, you know, it sort of goes back to, I think, what the group sort of spoke of maybe a year or two ago, was coming up with a plan and a map of where we would not build sidewalks, more so than where we would, and then, you know, how we contribute to those funds and how do we build that, how do we make that kind of physical investment, you know, that's reasonable. It's a good, I think it's a great topic.
Well, and a lot more people have been talking about it with COVID because, you know, in the last, you know, since not last 9 months, a lot of people have been out walking and realizing, you know, more than normal, how critical it is to have that infrastructure. And there's inconsistencies. And it's got to be frustrating for the city, for you, for developers of, okay, what are the, you know, what do we need? And what's the criterion? I don't think it's a black and white thing. So I would just want to pass that on to the new council of, you know, there can be a, you know, kind of a flow chart, you know, yes or no, does it trigger off this or this? I mean, even walking through Willamette, there was some inconsistency in curb profiles. So, you know, if you've got those city standards, it needs to be clear if you're applying for, you know, any kind of infill or development that you understand what is required, where you're building. And it's a big topic.
I think it's important to continue that, and that would be a really good topic because it ties in into multiple things, maybe the ADA ramp compliance, potentially the street trees, and which I think we tackled in the previous times too. So there are a couple of things that tie in together, so it would be good to talk about it.
Yeah, I would characterize that as just sort of more objective sidewalk standards for development and sidewalk infill projects. So,
okay, and then on the topic of House Bill 2001, there is a new committee that the council just approved, which is great because they're meeting. We do not have representation for transportation on that, which is impacted by this, you know, by any changes in housing. So I think it's important to understand what the impacts of House Bill 2001 are in our transportation system plan, because it affects our whole plan too.
Yeah, I'm just writing down notes here, trying to capture all of this.
Mary, it's a list. There's a big list coming. It's a fun, but you know this list.
Yeah.
You've lived this list. Mm-hmm. You've walked this list.
Yes, it's true. I'm eating the elephant one bite at a time.
Yes. How many people have asked you about these topics in the last few months?
A couple.
Oh. Hey, website. I don't know if we've talked much about contributions on the city website. I mean, we have some information about transportation up there, but I think it could be useful to have information that citizens can find things easily on these subjects. And maybe, I don't know, I'm a nerd. I mean, but I think there's a lot of nerds and curious people out there that are interested in where this information comes from.
Isn't it mostly on the Public Works already, or?
Yeah, I just captured that as website improvements related to transportation as a possible work plan topic. And, you know, I think that's always, you know, it's always challenging. How do you disseminate information to the public that may not be familiar with the city, and find ways to provide timely and impactful information that's easy to find, you know, so...
Well, I think there's another thing too that we've noticed is that you know, we had things, you know, like the 205 trolling project. I've been sitting in on the ODOT Origo meetings, the mileage. Oh my gosh, what's the name?
Pay by the mile instead of gas tax.
Pay by the mile. That's coming in 2027, so there's like this potential conflict of everyone's going to have to pay by the mile, and then we'll have tolling a couple years earlier. So it's like, that's not stuff that people want to be caught by surprise on. So it's like, if there can be project updates, and another thing that's important maybe on the website is where people can join regional advisory boards, because we really don't have representation on the 205 tolling project. Most of the people on the equity committees or on those boards with ODOT are from the metro, from the Portland area. So we don't have Clackamas County representation, and I'm sure in our 26,000 citizens, we've got people that could serve on, whether it's a county, you know, some regional board, so that we're ahead of these conversations. Because, I mean, Lance, you should just know this stuff by being omnipresent, but I don't think that's possible, you know, to get all that information at the same time. And we all get a little bit of information, but, you know, it's hard to keep up with and then find out there's, you know, there's things that are impacting us that we're not being heard on.
So
are you still seeing somebody from the member board here to attend?
Well, I mean, it'd be great for people from the board to attend, but sometimes, you know, I mean, these meetings are once a month, and you know, sometimes it's a challenge just on this board to be able to attend when you're working full time. So, you know, it's possible there may be people in the community that aren't on these boards, and if they're aware of it, they can apply for a Clackamas County or a regional board to report back to the transportation board.
My recommendation, if we can, if somebody from the board could attend, that would be better, because they would be connected with the city transportation planning and the impact on the city. And when we carry it to the county, to the state, so they would have the continuity and the knowledge from the cross agencies. So if that's doable, I think that would be better than just going to somebody who has to learn the process and understand the complications and be able to not only see or provide data back, but contribute to that discussion.
That's a good point.
Did you just volunteer?
I think you did, actually.
I heard that.
Well, I'll be happy if somebody could back me up just in case I need to go with Lance on a vacation.
Excellent.
On our work plan next year, do we have any capital projects we have to work on?
I didn't hear the last part of what you said.
Do we have any capital projects that we have to be working on? Capital projects. Next year.
I thought there were a bunch.
Yeah, the. Where are we? I'm trying to find where we're at on the agenda still.
We're still on 3BA of the work plan topics for next year. So maybe when we get to the capital projects update, I guess that'll.
I was about to put it. Okay.
Also, do we have, Lance, are you going to talk about Highway 43 jurisdictional transfer in the capital, well, in the capital projects, or is that a conversation for the council for next year? Because I don't know where we're at with that, but, you know, there's a lot of things that need to happen, but they've been pushing for that.
Well, yeah, there's, you know, the Metro Regional Transportation bond or PAC, you know, vote failed. So there isn't a regional transportation and initiative or construction, you know, projects are not moving forward. That includes not having the next light rail extension along I-5 to Washington County. It also means that Highway 43 doesn't have any funding that was originally slated to be included in the, and we worked really hard to have that included in that regional transportation package. Since that's not moving forward, there really isn't any motion per se on any kind of initiative to do a jurisdictional transfers. I think the Metro is sort of continuing that conversation and that discussion and sort of wrapping up their process, and they've identified some likely targets for jurisdictional transfer, like Highway 43, where they come into what they, I think what that Metro study will show is that transferring facilities directly from the state to individual municipalities doesn't really work 100% of the time, because there's always gaps, there's always inconsistencies, there's always a little unincorporated slivers here and there that really make that challenging. And so, you know, not to mention just the bringing the facilities up to acceptable level prior to a transfer. So I think, you know, if anything, what that Metro study will probably show in their analysis is that you know, jurisdictional transfers really have to include the counties as well as the state and the locals, and that, you know, it gets into this larger conversation, I think, not just in the Portland Metro region, but statewide, about, you know, and what I've been pushing with our lobby group is that this is really a conversation between the state and the counties on what should be a state route and what should be a county route, and are there state routes that really should be county routes, and then how do you transfer the funds between the state and the counties for maintenance of those facilities and ongoing operation of those facilities? And then have the conversation between the counties and the local jurisdictions about transfers from the county to the local. And that could happen very quickly, or it could be, you know, drug out over a very extended period of time. So I think there's a... I think the regional, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, are probably pushing for those jurisdictional transfers to occur more quickly and more rapidly, but when, you know, it's not really realistic, you know, and all parties have to agree to a jurisdictional transfer. So, you know, no matter what, it's not like the state can just, you know, and if the state is going to transfer, they could actually do it legislatively, I think, from the state to the county, but they could not just legislate that additional expense onto chartered cities. So, particularly for, you know, like stuff that's outside maybe even municipal boundaries. I mean, you get into really all kinds of crazy questions, like, what do you do with, like, the Arch Bridge, for example, on Highway 43? You know, like, who would take that if the state isn't doing it? You know, and so... You know, there's a lot more on that topic regionally and statewide than I think you know, maybe is, it's not just a next year topic, it's probably for a forever topic.
So I'm hearing that there's not funding to get the facilities up to the condition that they need to be in for a transfer, and that's not likely to happen in 2021.
Right.
Okay, I just want to make sure the new council does not need to worry about this and have a nice little surprise right. thrown in, because that's a hot potato, and then...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they got plenty on their plate just with tolling.
Another question, Lance. Is it... I heard that there may be another attempt in March. To go back, because it's a hot and dear topic for Metro. They don't want, and a lot of public agencies had a lot of interest in it. I think what I heard that it's just failed because of lack of information, and maybe in March to try to take another attempt. Is that a rumor more than reality from your public agency's perspective? If we quit that topic, then we will be losing the momentum toward Highway 43 up a big color. If we completely shift gear from that,
I mean, I think there's lots of conversation about how to get it back on the ballot in a way that will pass. I have not heard March as a target date to put it back on the ballot. I mean, we're already past, I believe, the timeline to get it on a March ballot. So, I think what I have heard is that there's a lot of conversations about improving the scope and doing some more initial design work on some of the projects that were more sort of nebulous. You know, I think the light rail project's pretty well developed. I think actually Highway 43 was the most advanced and most developed project of all the street or road projects that were being considered. And so I think there's a push by ODOT to, and maybe others, to sort of fine-tune their design a little bit more on some of their projects and see what resonated with voters and what doesn't. And I think part of it, too, is also the funding mechanism because of, you know, an income tax is, I think, put people off a little bit, particularly with the COVID scenario and the, you know, downturn in the economy. So I think those are probably going to be the two things that will happen. I don't know if it will see that back on the ballot in March. I certainly think we'll probably see it back on the ballot. I just don't know when, you know, as far as timing. If I was guessing, I would say, you know, maybe fall of 21, maybe March of 22, just because of, you know, all the different players involved in the work behind some of that, and a lot of, I think they'll do a lot more polling at the metro level. So those are just my thoughts on where that stands.
Thank you, Lynn.
And then there is one more thing on the list that we have talked about during the year, which is safe routes to school. So it would be good for us to for the new council to know what schools are participating in safe routes. And we did have that the funding for some of the sidewalk programs and identifying, you know, where those projects occur next. So is that something we're
going to
put on for next year for council?
Yeah, all of this, you know, all of the cities, all of the Westland Wilsonville schools participate that are located in Westland, and I think district wide participate in the Safe Routes program, and they have mapped safe routes, routes and maps. You know, the school district does all that. That's all on the school district's website. I think you can actually Google search Safe Routes Westland Wilsonville and those will pop up in your search. But the $1 million that's earmarked in the GO bond for Safe Route projects is currently under design. We It's been a while, but before COVID, we went out and canvassed all the neighborhoods and got feedback from all the neighborhood associations on the projects that they were most wanting to see move forward. And so we have that inventory of projects, and we have started design work on those projects. Some of them will move more quickly than others because of the nature of the project, but they're all sort of in the queue and moving forward. Of course, there are far more Safe Routes capital projects than there is funding. I think there was like 20 million in identified projects and 1 million available in funding. So, you know, the question, I think, on Safe Routes becomes a question of, you know, what are the next steps beyond this initial, you know, $1 million investment? And I don't, I mean, it is timely with the budget. I just, it's almost one of those things that's sort of another ongoing forever conversation that sort of probably ties back even to the, you know, objective sidewalk standards for development and infill projects to some degree is like, you know, how does this all play together and how do we finance this? You know, so maybe the question for the next budget cycle is how do you finance the remaining Safe Routes projects?
Okay.
One last note. Is this committee at the whole reading the discussion of a pedestrian bike bridge?
Greg, could you repeat that? I really couldn't hear
it. Yeah, I was going to say your mic. I don't know if your microphone's a little muted, but.
That conversation about a bike pad to be a bridge across the land, does this committee have any. Would we have any involvement in that conversation?
I would assume to some degree, yes. The ODOT is leading that project. For those that may not be familiar with this, ODOT is leading a project right now to look at basically planning alternatives for bike and ped crossings of the Willamette River in proximity to the existing Arch Bridge and I-205 bridges. There is a regional coordinated effort to basically create a regional bike route that extends along I-205, basically parallels I-205. In West Lynn, if you go north, I guess I'll back up. If you go north, like up at the 82nd interchange with I-205, you'll see that existing path along directly adjacent to I-205. Then there's plans for that path to extend through Gladstone, basically paralleling I-205 and extend through Oregon City. Right now they're looking at basically replacing what was called the Trolley Trail Bridge in Gladstone to Oregon City across the Clackamas River. And in West Lynn, our part of the path really is the planned improvements all along Willamette Falls Drive. And obviously our first piece of that is just been completed with construction in the downtown Main Street area from 10th to 16th. Those improvements would extend all the way down with Clackamas County's piece out into along the Borland Corridor, an extension from Willamette Falls Drive and all the way out into Tualatin and sort of going out towards I-5. So there's this sort of regional plan. The one hook or the one pinch point has always been, how do you get across the Willamette River? There's really no easy way to build that crossing at the I-205 bridge. So ODOT is looking at how or where would those improvements or that bike-ped connection be since it's not really feasible on the I-205 bridge itself. So they're looking at the existing arch bridge. They'll be looking at other potential crossing locations, converting the arch bridge potentially to biped, and then building a separate vehicle bridge. These are all like just very generalized concepts that have been thrown out there. And it's ODOT's goal over the course of the next couple of years, or at least I think the project timeline is this next year, to study these alternatives and come up with a recommended route or location or alternative for bike peds to cross Willamette Fall or the Willamette River in a safe and practical way, above and beyond the existing crossing at the Arch Bridge. So that's the big, you know, that's the big ODOT project in a nutshell. It's got obviously people from Oregon City involved, people from elected officials from West Lynn are involved, city managers are going to be involved in that process and discussion. A lot of conversations in that discussion with the PGE as a major landholder there, also a big conversation in that project with the tribe, who's the other big landholder on the Oregon City side, and private landowners, other private landowners in the area. You've got the conversations involving the LOCS group, which is now a state group involved in that. So there's a lot of interest in that. I think ODOT's looking to do outreach. They will probably do outreach to this group as well as to the council, so I would expect to see that on your radar, but I don't know if that's a project. It's certainly not a city project just for the TAB. It's more of a regional project for ODOT.
How can we make sure that ODOT reaches out to us? Because it was pretty quiet on the tolling, so.
Yeah, this is a more localized project, so they have a whole outreach group and committee. They've engaged Kittleson as their consultant on the project, and we were, as staff, involved in their selection. They will have a pretty robust outreach effort, I think, in the next year. I think, like everybody, they're sort of like everything's on. We're all waiting for COVID to end so we can get back to more meaningful engagement, and so I think we'll see that hopefully in the next year.
I couldn't hear that, Greg.
He wants to make sure Lance talks to us if he hears anything.
Yes.
Okay. And make sure we're not sitting at the kids' table this time.
Right.
So for the board then, do you feel that that's enough topics, or does that cover the topics to move forward to for the council for the 2021 work plan?
Sounds good to me.
Sounds like a good list to me.
Sure.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't recall if we gave anything priorities. Is that something that happens, or you just give them a list? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we could move on to 3B, update on I-205 tolling. We've kind of touched on that a little bit. There's been things in the paper and, about how some of our regional partners feel about it out here in Clackamas County. So what updates do you have, Lance?
Actually, this is pretty timely. I just participated in a outreach session that ODOT did with the Clackamas County agencies and technical staff. They, they have now, ODOT has a new Office of Mobility and Mega Projects, and this tolling sort of falls in their lap. And of course, a lot of the tolling, a lot of that conversation really is centered on the Rose Corridor. So, like you said, everybody, you know, as Kim put it, everybody sits at the kids' table except for the city of Portland. So sometimes we get included, sometimes we don't. But for the most part, I think what ODOT's basically, you know, they certainly have gotten a lot of feedback, mostly negative, obviously, for tolling. I think they're actually looking at, you know, revenue. You know, obviously it's all about revenue, and how to pay for these mega projects, you know, whether it's the bridge for I-205 and the I-205 widening, or if it's the Rose Corridor project. There's other projects and investments needed in the system around the Portland metro area beyond those two projects. And so ODOT's actually, in their latest presentation, identified tolling a lot more of the interstate system, almost all of the interstate system, and not just the pieces that were identified in the, at least what's been shared to date. They did share that they do think that they may convince the state legislature, and this is all to be determined in the next legislative session, next year, that they think they have a path forward to potentially fund construction of the I-205 project in advance of tolling, and then get that funding reimbursed from tolling as tolling funds start. So sort of think of it like a construction loan on your house, right? Where you get a loan before you build it, then you build it, then you pay back the loan. So so they're contemplating that. I think this gets to sort of, you know, this bigger conversation of what ODOT considers their three-legged stool to funding, and that their three-legged stool for regional transportation funding, statewide transportation funding, it's a three-legged stool. They consider the legs to be, number one, gas tax, which is a diminishing source of funds over time, and may eventually be replaced with the Origo, cost per mile kind of system. The other leg of that is your basic fees, like your registration fees. And so that's another source of funding, so paid annually or something to that effect, like a DMV permit kind of. And then they have a third leg, which is tolling, which doesn't currently exist. And so I think they may have mentioned something else. I can't remember what that is, what that other source of funding is. I want to say it's like the other source of funding I want to say is like the big bond projects, like where that come from general state revenue, which is another option, I suppose. So this is the conversation that's happening. I mean, this gets back to, in my opinion, the lack of federal leadership on transportation funding, and the fact that we haven't increased the gas tax, since, I want to say, Clinton, if that's right, Greg, and Clinton hasn't been in office for quite some time, and so, You know, it's unfortunate we don't see more media, in my opinion, out of China, because they fund transportation very effectively, and they are blowing right past us in transportation leadership. You know, in basically all facets of transportation, and we're sort of just, you know, band-aiding what we have. And we have a great system that was very well funded in, you know, post-World War II. A huge amount of funding as a percentage of the gas bill went to funding and building the interstate system, but we just really haven't done that since. So I think that gets into that conversation. I think it gets into this whole, like, what is the system going to look like? I can tell you from listening to the staff, from the Mobility and Mega Project staff, that they are looking to European models for that funding. And European models, basically, if you go to Europe, you'll see tolls on all the freeways everywhere. And they're very well funded and very well put together, and they move a lot of traffic. They also help fund rail, both heavy and light, to move people and cargo. And the local systems are pretty poor. So if you're moving to a European system, you know, go. After COVID, go visit Italy, and you'll see what they're looking at as far as their model. But I think that's one way to look at it. I think the Texas way to look at it's probably vastly different. So I think there's a lot more to come on the conversation of tolling. I don't see that being something that's resolved in the next year. I think it's going to be a big political item for several years.
How comfortable are you with the information you're getting? Because, you know, several of us have been on this board for a while, and it wasn't flagged in a meaningful way. And for the meetings that I'm able to listen to, you know, the representatives, you know, like state representatives who are pushing for it don't live anywhere near this. They're excited, and like, it doesn't impact you. And again, we do not have representation. We have very little representation from Clackamas County. And, you know, my concern is that this is targeted, because they were initially talking about tolling from I-5 from the river, the Columbia River, all the way down to Wilsonville and all of 205. And they keep talking about it as a system, but then putting a toll that's so incredibly targeted is like taking a fire hose and squeezing it into a soaker hose.
Yeah.
And then pushing it into our neighborhood. So it's like, okay, you're going to move on 205, but it's going to impact our transportation master plan. It's going to, you know, it's going to impact our city budgets of how we can, you know, we started talking about maintenance. How do you maintain it when the freeway spills through Highway 43 and through Stafford and through County Road? So are you comfortable, Lance, that you're getting kept in the loop?
Yeah.
Timely from ODOT, or is this just, you know?
No, yeah, we're definitely in the loop. I think that, you know, they're just now, you know, I think they're targeting I-205 in West Lynn and the Rose Corridor, because those are where the two mega projects are right now. And they're also targeting and sort of incorporating I-205 in that, because we are not a disadvantaged community. You know, our area in general is not disadvantaged and as far as the federal government is concerned. And so it's a lot easier to start the snowball there and then let it build to expand out to all these other parts of the interstate system. So I think that's sort of the tactic that's being used. And they haven't even started really talking about diversion in a meaningful way or any of those topics, because their studies have already shown that there'll be those concerns are very much real. And so they have to, in their next study, figure out a way to address that. And so that gets into all kinds of options, from closing roads to tolling side roads to putting geographic boundaries on these new tolling systems, where you get exceptions based on, you know, where you may live or your destination points, because the electronics and tolling systems that they're looking at are much more sophisticated today. There would not be a tolling booth where you know, put your quarter in the slot. That's yesterday's news. This is all about electronics and reading license plates at, you know, 70, 80 miles an hour, and electronic transponders, and, you know, whole systems that are designed for much more sophisticated approaches to addressing the very concerns that you're talking about. So that's what I'm saying. I think we're still several years, honestly, away from real tolling. Now, they may, like I said, this week was the first time I ever heard them talk about front-loading construction of these projects in advance of tolling, you know, which I almost take as a positive, because that means the project's moving forward, right? But, you know, that becomes the issue, is really tolling to me is realistically, and just knowing the process of tolling, I mean, particularly after living in a tolling state, I mean, I would say they're probably 10 years away from tolling.
Can I ask you a question, Lance? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, my video isn't working.
That's all right.
What is that structure that's been built over the freeway northbound 205 right by the viewpoint turnout?
That's their ITS boards and readers, so that they can do traveler information. They have that built there, as well as there's a couple others that have been built along the corridor.
So it's nothing to do with tolling.
No.
Okay.
Not that it couldn't be a structure that could be available to tolling, but it's not a tolling item as it were.
Okay. Well, at least you're. It sounds like we're more in the loop on this, and hopefully we're hearing from our neighbors too. Because I have talked to people in other cities. I mean, Gladstone, you know, they definitely have a much higher disadvantaged population, and they're, you know, and they're still mm-hmm. impacted. So I think the big concern is that it's such a targeted area mm-hmm. of, you know, instead of having it being system wide. So. Okay, that's where we're at on the tolling. Does anybody have any other information that they've, you know, aside from what Lance shared on the progress or the status of the I-205 tolling?
No.
Okay. 3C, our annual report to council. This is the forum, so we can include our highlights and notes and the work plan topics to send forward, yes?
Well, you know, looking back at 2020, there's not a whole lot to report on, because we only had two meetings, well.
Three, this is our third.
Well, if you count the one, we had a joint meeting with the Planning Commission.
Oh, yes.
And so that would actually, I guess, constitute one. So this would be our fourth meeting of the year. So there's not a whole lot to report on, but I guess they're still looking for something from us. Is that correct?
Right. And hopefully everybody can see my screen that I've shared, that is the 2020 annual report form. It's on the city's website. It's linked in your agenda. I would assume that Kim would fill this out for the group. Certainly, Kim, if you need or want, Morgan or I could help with that. Probably Morgan, since I'll be out next week. But
on vacation.
Yes. in here you'll see you know, basic information. You know, I think every group is, you know, feeling the 2020 challenges of COVID and not being able to meet, and IT challenges and meeting challenges is a big part of 2020. I think if the group wants, you can certainly touch base with Kim and give her some accomplishments. We already talked about the goals for 2021, so we can help facilitate getting that input. And then it's really just additional information. The NA grant spending is only applicable to NAs, not to advisory boards, so we don't have to worry about that one. But it should be pretty short and pretty straightforward if anybody has any issues.
Could I suggest that we use the same format as in the past, and whether that's Kim or you, Lance, but that someone takes a stab at drafting the initial draft, spends it out, and we respond to it and edit it as we feel appropriate. Mm-hmm. Would that work?
Yeah, I think they're trying to move everything more electronically, but Kim, if you can get with Morgan after the meeting, and then we can figure out a way to send that out electronically before submitting it to the group, and then get everybody's feedback, then you guys can work out a submittal.
Sounds good. Great. I mean, the challenge, COVID's easy. If anybody can think of anything else that was a challenge this year, that's the obvious one. Okay. I will do that with Morgan. So moving on to, we really did, I think we've got a great list of 2021 work plans, for the goals to move forward. So this is, it's there. So if anybody... unless anybody has anything to add, we can move on to capital projects, number four. And you've kind of touched on that already, Lance, a little.
Yep. So capital project updates, I will let everybody know that we do have trees being delivered to Main Street today. So our front end loader is just barely big enough to pick up some of those trees. Some of them are almost too big for it. So they may not look like it necessarily, but the root ball on those weighs over a ton each. So it's like picking up a car every time we move one of those trees. So that's going in, should be seeing trees delivered this week. We are working on sort of punch listing that project out. The PGE's removed all the power lines from Willamette Falls Drive, but we're still waiting on the communications companies to remove theirs, and then once they're off, then PGE can remove the poles, and we can redo and patch each one of those spots where the poles are. So there will be some work. Knowing the communication companies, that it will likely be sometime in the spring before we actually have all that done, because they're just notoriously slow. And then if bad weather shows up, then they just run and go someplace else, and we don't see them for an extended period of time. So it's just a time management issue, in my opinion, with those guys. We are working with ODOT on the 10th Street project, and trying to finalize that. We're looking at roundabouts. We presented that to council a while back. Potential standard roundabout on the south side of I-205, as well as a mini roundabout at Willamette Falls Drive itself, and working with the adjacent property owners there on those concepts. Hoping to see that move to construction probably in the fall of next year. Again, COVID's delaying everything, so that one probably will be late in the next year. We'll be talking with council about that too. I might be working on recommending that some of that work be done at night, so that we avoid a lot of the problems of working in the daytime. And there's not a lot of people or homes right around the interchange right there, so that might be a good option for that project. The We are working on our next year's annual road program, which includes a lot. We're focusing and targeting a lot on streets that have basically are beyond the preservation side of things, and pretty much are more or less full depth rehab kind of projects. Those are streets where we've already replaced the water lines on those streets. One of the big challenges we have that the Utility Advisory Board is pushing in their 2021 update to council is the lack of funding for replacing water lines. There's quite a few asbestos cement lines that I know if I tried to redo the road, then the water line would fail. So, and then I'd be out there replacing the water line in the middle of my road project. So, water finance is a big issue.
Lance, when you say the line would fail, could you explain that a little bit more? What do you mean? What would happen? It's going to collapse.
It's
just so old and decrepit.
I lost you a little bit there, Rich. But so what happens in those old asbestos cement water lines is that they're fine as long as you don't touch them, but they're very frail. So, and they're very sensitive to vibration. And so when we're redoing a road, we will be compacting all of the dirt and all of the asphalt, and that vibration ripples through the ground. And when it hits those water lines, causes the water lines to either shear or separate. And oftentimes, it's at the individual service connections, because the service connections are much more shallower than the water line itself. And so that ripples through and into the water line there. And then when we start trying to patch those water lines, the water line will just crumple as we try to connect and patch to it. So we end up replacing whole sections every time we try and patch a old pipeline. Because if you think of that pipeline, it's almost like, I think of it like an eggshell. You know, it's very sensitive to major movement. And so the road work alone will tend to destroy those water lines, or cause them to fail in some way. So that becomes the issue. Not always the case. Sometimes we can get by with it, but certainly a major issue in certain neighborhoods where those types of water lines exist. Now we have ductile iron or cast iron water lines. That's not so much of an issue. Cast iron is subject to freeze thaw cycles and can have stress fractures from that, but not so much from construction. The AC lines are the ones that have the biggest risk with construction. And of course, ductile iron is great. It lasts forever, and we're doing new wraps on it that I think it will last a couple hundred years easy. AC water line, you know, we're lucky to get 40 years out of it. And all the AC water lines were installed around 1965 to 1975. And so, so they're all at the end of their life. So that's a challenge. Let's see, I got from Ria. Tandler Drive, I'd have to look up Tandler Drive. I think I get a question on that one. I don't know when that one's happening. I have to look it up. The ones that we're doing next year are mostly, I think, in the Bolton and Robinwood neighborhoods. Let's see, what else is going on? Transportation. Oh, ODOT is moving forward with the Highway 43 project, which is mainly the Cedar Oak to Hidden Springs intersection area. We're partnering with them on that. They re-scoped their project through the TIP and STIP and MTIP, and so they're put a year in paperwork, and now they're back to design drawing again. Which is good. So that's moving forward, and it's been a real eye-opener for ODOT staff to work with us on that project as we move to the separated bike path concept, which is completely foreign, actually, to ODOT. They're doing some of that work out on Powell Boulevard, but they're really using our process, I think, as a benchmark to how they move forward in the future. And in fact, their latest design manual from ODOT, called the Blueprint for Urban Design, actually highlights our project in a page of that manual. So, and I think a lot of people will be looking to our Main Street project as a sort of a poster candidate on how to build streets and accommodate bikes and micro mobility in those kinds of locations. And so a lot of people interested in our projects.
Who owns the road that goes into Multnomah? There's a separated bike lane there when you come off of I-5 and you take that exit to go into Multnomah Village. If you're heading I-5 north, there's a long separated bike lane there. Is that not ODOT?
I have to look. That's probably ODOT, but I think that, you know, if you're looking at separated bike lanes, a lot of them are different, particularly around the traffic signals, than what we're proposing, because we keep everything independent of the street. So now, if you're talking like a totally separate bike multi-use trail path, like the what's a big one? What's the big one that goes out to Gresham? The Springwater Trail. You know, like that's a totally separated facility. This concept that we're incorporating into our design is new to ODOT. So particularly at traffic signals. So all good things moving forward, all but not as fast as we would like for a variety of reasons. That's moving forward. We are wrapping up our 30% design for Willamette Falls Drive and for Highway 43. That should be done here pretty shortly. The Willamette Falls Drive concept plan is wrapping up. That should be available to both this group and the Planning Commission in 2021, so expect to see that coming up for final adoption and approval as an addition to the transportation system plan as an appendix, very similar to what we did for Highway 43. So all stuff are happening. I look forward to 2021 is hopefully a year of forward momentum.
So. Hey Lance, could you give us what's the current status of the hill parking on Willamette Falls Drive, Main Street, and has the council landed on keeping that, or are they going to reverse it?
Back end.
So that is probably a question for Mary more than it is for me. My guess is that the new council, it's not on the agenda for the remainder of this year. So my guess is that the newly elected council will take up that topic, most likely February, by the time everything is said and done. And we'll revisit that whole conversation. I mean, boy, I never knew that having people back into an angle parking spot would generate so much interest from a community. I think, you know, all the stuff we talk about here, the back end angle parking on those six blocks has generated more social media input than any other topic in the history of social media in the city of Westland. So,
Lance, isn't it correct? Did council vote finally on rear end parking, right?
Yes, they voted
as
for.
We are now.
They voted for the temporary striping. Of course, it rained when we were trying to put the temporary striping down, which caused a lot of it to peel up. And it's pretty much been raining consistently ever since. For the temporary striping to really work, it has to be above 40 degrees and it has to be dry. And having that happen in Portland, probably won't see that until like March.
Third week of January.
Yeah.
It's always good weather, third week of January.
Right. So,
we're on your calendar.
So that's been a struggle because we haven't wanted to put down any kind of paint that would be, you know, impossible to peel up. But there's really not a good product out there that lasts in the rain and cold. And so we've sort of just been getting by, and of course the police department is not enforcing or ticketing for back in angle parking yet. I think the plan is to start that in January. I think, you know, that will be a big topic probably very quickly and very early in the new council's conversations.
Yes.
Just tell me how you want it to go. Just kidding.
So you can blame it on Tab? Like, Tab,
yeah,
can you do it?
Yeah. It's that dastardly Tab. I drove by there today and most people were backed in.
Yeah, they're getting me. And we had a robust conversation about why we had to do it, so that hasn't changed. It's driver's stubbornness.
They'll get used to it. But they're getting used to it. It's not as bad as I think.
I agree. Making the parking spaces wider, I think, helped people with their confidence a little bit. So I think it's going to work.
Yeah.
I have a good feeling.
Yes, I agree, man.
Okay, so Lance, did you have any other capital projects?
No, unless anybody has any questions.
I have one. Last year, maybe it was 2 years ago now, I can't remember it. You showed us a general design or concept for Salamo Road, improvements that would be made to Salamo Road, going up the hill, adding sidewalk. Is that advancing at all? Where does that stand?
That's part of the 10th Street project. So the part of the 10th Street project includes the intersection, not only the stuff on the Main Street side of 10th, but also redoing the traffic signal at Salamo and Blankenship, and also extending the multi-use path up along the White Oak Savannah frontage all the way to connect in to near the Barrington Drive area. And then I think there's an existing push, sort of a flashing sign at, I can't remember, I think it's Bland, that intersection, as well as the intersection at Barrington, was planned to have RRFB push buttons, so it'd be a little bit more visible than anything that's out there right now for those crossings.
Hey, sorry, Lance. Hey, I keep on hearing people worrying about the safety of the crossing at Salamo, and is it Day Road there by the Starbucks?
Yeah.
Any potential for getting a flashing crossing signal there?
Yeah, we just got ODOT to lower the speed limit through there, which I think was a big help. We also pulled out some of the landscaping that I think was obstructing visibility with lower profile landscaping. But, you know, certainly if, you know, the there's nothing that says we can't do more there. I think if that's a way that the council wants to go, we could do that. It's just one of those, it's always one of those things with the RFBs of where wouldn't you put one? Right, you know, like it's and those are forever expensive because the initial capital cost is only probably half the expense. It's really the ongoing O&M that's the real expense of all those push buttons and mechanical systems, and a lot of them, it depends on where they're located. Sometimes solar won't work, which means that then you've got to add power, and you know, it becomes much more challenging. But it's not that it can't be done, it's just it's just trying to be decisive on where it makes the most sense.
Right, thank you.
So Lance, have you, I'm sorry, I just, this topic is a little bit dear to my heart. So I installed a lot of those back when on the public agency sites, and you're right, once you feel, but have you done any solar study to determine if it's solar is going to work there or not? Usually the manufacturer does it for you, so it's really no cost there for the, I mean, like in terms of initial investment, at least in the feasibility part of it. As for the need for it, the downhill side, on my assumption, needed more than the uphill side, because the uphill side has the vision and it's just usually a little slower than downhill. Most of the time people don't control that speed. So if the cost, which I always, it's always there, is a factor, consideration to have one, because currently there is something there, it's non-standard. So honestly, I don't know if even the city legally liable for having non-standardized equipment there. If something to happen, are you protected by tort claim? Just, hey, you got something there, not even standard, that's flashing things that you put around those panels. Are these even MUTCD compliant? I encourage you to look at this. I don't think it's, as you said, there are a lot of areas needed. And with this, is this a, one of the highest priority that's needed or not?
Right.
I'm sure that I live and walk there. I don't recall seeing fatality or crashes there. So maybe that's not the high factor there. But at least to close that chapter, because I know I've heard it multiple times, if you could just do like a quick back on napkin calculations, and okay, here's the initial cost, here's the feasibility of solar there, and then put something, and here's the general guideline where we put them and where we don't put them. Maybe it helps for the city and help the board and help other people ask, why did you put it here? Why did you not put it here?
Right.
And then this way you could just support it. Usually the way I used to put them, into the, along with the Safe Route to School, along with those part of the larger program. When you look at assets management, you see where it's needed, where it's not needed. And then it's about $20,000, $30,000 investment. So it's not like cheap, but it's not super expensive. If you start thinking about it, a few locations, I say every couple of years we'll put one. If we think there are locations where they needed it, and so we could say, okay, we go back to the council and say every couple of years invest some money and put them into an infrastructures where it could be safe crossing for walkers, and supplement the sidewalk topping we were talking about earlier, where not only where you need sidewalk, where you could cross safely. So that's my, I know I didn't mean to lecture, I just meant to share my experience, that's all.
So I think you remember they're talking two different locations. The Bland location has the old edge light on the crosswalk. That one's getting replaced with an RRFB in the 10th Street Salamo project. So, and that one was MUTCD compliant at the time of its install. So now that we're upgrading it, we'll upgrade it to the latest standard. And then the crossing at Day Road does not have any flashing indication. It's got street lighting, it's got standard signage, it's got the improved Like all crossings, for the most part on Salamo, they have the improved, what I call piano key style, pavement marking and all of that. Certainly adequate signage, meets or exceeds MUTCD standards. So all that's in place. The issue that we have in West Lynn is our standards for safety are much higher than statewide standards or even federal standards. So so then, you know, the city has a traffic safety committee, and the traffic safety committee is made up of law enforcement as well as school district and city engineering and public works staff. And so that group typically will review requests like this concern at Day Road, and then they'll go through the whole objective process of looking at speeds, sight triangles and vision, history of accidents, experiences of law enforcement in those areas, and make recommendations on how to proceed. We've also developed in the Traffic Safety Committee a sort of an objective tool for measuring where improved crossing would be considered. So, in fact, that tool we may end up doing a statewide presentation at APWA at some point on how that works and what we do. So we're certainly engaged in all that and keeping an eye on it all. And that one is always one that comes up because, you know, it's just a challenge. That it's actually amazing. We get as many requests at the driveway entrance at Safeway where people are crossing to go to church as we do at Day Road or any other location in the city. We also get a lot of requests up on Santa Anita, and the crossings at Santa Anita where there's sometimes limited visibility from the vertical curves there and speeds. You know, but we also get requests on Carriageway. We get requests, you know, at other locations around the city. We get requests where we don't even have sidewalks for crossings. So, the Traffic Safety Committee is a good objective measure that incorporates not just public works or engineering comments, but also law enforcement and the school district.
The tool that you're talking about for this, I'm looking at the city webpage under public works, under streets, where the Traffic Safety Committee is. So they've got the steps listed.
Mm-hmm.
And a PDF of the traffic improvement investigation request. So that's what. So if we were going to point somebody to it, that's where they would go.
Absolutely. So
it's so easy to find when you know it's there.
Yes. So if somebody just, you know, maybe a Google search for traffic requests would get you to this page. I don't know, but the page I think that. Let's see if I can share this, that I just brought it up myself, that Kim's referring is this Public Works page. It's sort of buried in Public Works, because we, you know, it's just the way the city's website's divided, and maybe there's something that we can do to improve that, but, it's sort of listed there, you know, below streetlight requests and sandbags, but on the sidebar, but you know, it is there. There are frequently asked questions there. Anybody calls us or emails us or whatever, we can point them to this. And if you scroll to the bottom of the page, you'll see the request sheet, and there's a fillable PDF form here where people can make a request for anything that's any kind of traffic control item, whether it's a stop sign or street lighting or not being able to see around a corner because of, you know, trees or hedges or anything else, that they can make the request there, and then that group looks at those And we document all that. Each request gets a document number. We take minutes of all those meetings so we can refer back to them later. You can actually look up prior traffic control requests on the city's webpage. In the and it's listed right here. Hopefully people can see this on my screen. In the city's e-file system and see prior requests that were submitted. And you just in the e-file system type the keyword traffic safety and it'll all come up dating back several years. So pretty robust. Anything else? Got a thumbs up. That's a cool thumbs up.
That's a big thumb.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lance, I just wanted to go back real briefly on 10th Street Project,
mm-hmm.
which you said encompasses Salamo Road. I hope when we get down the road and get closer to actual construction or whatever, that you can separate the terminology, because I would have a really hard time identifying improvements on Salamo Road, particularly when you're up in Barrington and beyond with 10th Street. It just doesn't compute. And I think it's going to be very confusing. So, comment.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think our connection's slowing down here. So, did we lose?
Well, I'm wondering about that. Forgetting the video with 5 seconds behind, you know.
You know, WebEx is getting tired, Rich.
I don't know. But right now, my video is being stopped. That's from what I see. I don't know what you're seeing.
Yeah, and it looks like we lost Mary, too, so.
Mary's going to jump off to the Willamette Neighborhood Association meeting.
Yes.
So,
Gosh. What happened to Greg?
Is Greg gone?
I think Greg's having the same connection difficulty.
Yeah, to be real with you guys, I want to start that. Lance, this webcam is problematic. Compared to Zoom, I find WebEx just doesn't work smoothly at all. I mean, I've got some distortion in the audio, like when you're talking less, sometimes it echoes a little bit. And yeah. As I said, you guys are all, the video is in real time, and the audio is in sync with your voice, with your lips. I can't, when I'm talking, I'm completely out of sync. Nice, you know, I don't know how it came across, but this whole WebEx is a problem, from my opinion.
We can add that to the challenges for our council report.
There you go.
Every time. Okay, does anybody else, did that answer your question, Rich, from what you could hear from Lance?
Yeah, no, I think he understands where I'm coming from, with the terminology of that project, and we're long ways off that, but I'm sure it'll be just at the appropriate time.
Does anybody else have any items of discussion or announcements? I couldn't tell if Rich was humming.
Oh, sorry about that.
I don't, so we could move, if nobody has anything on number 5, number 6, public comment. I did not get any notification that we had anybody scheduled to make comment tonight. Are you aware of anybody waiting to speak?
No, and there's nobody I see. You know, we just posted this web link on the meeting agenda form so that people can just click in at any point. So, And I don't see anybody else outside of the committee members on the meeting, so I don't anticipate there's any public comment.
Nobody ever comes to hang out with us. They have no idea how cool transportation is.
Wow.
That's why Andrew's here, is because you know how cool it is.
I know. That's the only reason I'm here.
I think you're a transportation geek. I think that would be the right term for you.
It is, because I'm like, I'm not going to add anything else to board discussion tonight. So, okay. Well, if we don't have any public comments, or, you know, just once more around, Lance, Greg, Riyadh, Andrew, Rich, anything you want to?
I just wanted to say a big thank you to this group for the end of this year and for everybody that, you know, considered or thought about or did run for office, whether you were elected or not. I appreciate it immensely. And I, you know, everybody was asking me at the staff level, like, boy, what's up with the transportation group? Like, why are they all so, you know, I was like, there must be a connection. I appreciate it. I really do.
Thank you for saying that, Lance.
If you can be excited about transportation, you're excited about council meetings.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Does that label us as the most political advisory group in the city? Something that is. Hey, do you want to see one more thing? I wanted to ask for mention, and perhaps it's best brought up with Morgan, but so I know that there are, I think as I saw, there's two openings on this committee. You know, they're currently taking
three
applicants. Maybe it's three, I don't know. You know, I haven't got a clue if I'm one of those that are going off this year. I've never seen what my term is. Is it possible that we could get a listing of when our terms started and when they end, so we kind of have the advance notice that we're going to be around in a year or whatever.
Tim, isn't it 4 years?
It's 4 years, but it's like, you know, we just keep coming to these meetings and we're like, what year is it? You know, you think it's only been a year, it's two.
That's exactly. I don't think when I came on board, I don't think I ever received an official notice that said, "Welcome to this committee, attorney."
No.
You know, I'm just into the meetings.
Nope.
Yeah, that's staff has voiced to the various city managers that would be a good thing to do to do a welcome and. You know, we try and encourage the council and mayor to do that. I don't know if we've had a lot of success with that, but I will see if I can get a listing of members' start dates and end dates for everybody. And maybe that'll be another one for Morgan to work on.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Rich is totally right. I mean, I think when I got in sustainability, I didn't even know until I got a meeting notice. I'm like, I guess I'm on the board because nobody. And then I got a letter of welcome about 3 weeks later. So I was like, okay, thanks.
But it's 4 years, though, Kim, right? I think.
It's four.
So what happens at the end of that fourth year? You jump ship and go on another board, or?
No, you apply again because this is the cool group.
But you can reapply for the same board.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, but if there are three vacancies, who among us are going off?
Carrie's going off because she's on council. Yeah.
Who?
Mary is on council, so she has to step down. Yeah.
Who are the other two?
We'll find out when Lance sends us the list.
Be nice to know, yeah.
I don't know.
Andrew, my experience is that after a couple of few rounds, you become a chair of the group.
Stay tuned, Rian. Oh my gosh.
Cool.
All right. Well, If we're good and Lance is gonna send us who's where in their terms, then we have no public comments, then who would
I
like
would
to
we adjourn.
Okay. Does anyone second that motion?
Second.
Okay. I think thumbs up. Okay. Fiona has mastered the thumb.
Do that.
Okay, so let's we will adjourn our transportation board meeting at 7:41 p.m. on December 9th.
Nice one. Thanks, Kim. Thanks a lot.
Have a Merry Christmas, folks.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Everyone. And this is our Christmas party. This is our nerd Christmas party.
Yeah, right.
All right.
There he is. Bye.
Too much.
Happy Christmas, everyone.
Too much.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
I get out of here.
Ha, ha, ha.